If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day, and welcome to the program. A very special edition from Australia on this Anzac Day. If you are listening or watching from another part of the world, for those who are doing that right now, this is the 25th of April. And on that day in 1915, Australian and New Zealand soldiers formed part of an Allied force and set out to capture the Gallipoli Peninsula. And these became known as the Anzacs. And the day now commemorates all our men and women who fought in all conflicts, not just Gallipoli, since that time. And today, our show includes a very special commemoration of the day, coincidentally on this day, by sheer coincidence, that Australians played a major role in defeating the Germans in France in World War One. This is one hell of a story from a place in France that I have been to on Anzac Day on no less than two occasions, and where the blood of my own family is buried. A very special commemoration. All of that with war historian and documentary maker, Dr. Will Davies, on the program a little bit later. First up, though, I do want to speak further today about the morons and the government sycophants who are standing behind the e-safety commissioner in supporting the censorship of social media. Well, it just happens to be X, not all social media, despite the fact that the vision in question is on just about every other social media platform, but it's X in the firing line. It will go down in history as the time when mainstream media abandoned Australians. They forgot about what their job was and adhered to their corporate masters. It is just appalling. We'll get back to that very shortly on the show. I've got two commentators on the program today who primarily fight for liberty, free speech, and transparency. I couldn't have them on the program at a better time. These are all key human rights to them. They should be key human rights to you. And of course, they are being bastardized by the eSafety Commissioner. They've been bastardized by the federal Labor government and now even bastardized by the coalition opposition, who should be ashamed. Now, the leader of the New South Wales Libertarian Party, John Ruddick, MLC, will join us this hour. And next hour, Dr. Melissa Albacete will be on the program. Now, Melissa is an Argentinian libertarian activist and currently resides in Australia and is an outspoken commentator on the perils of socialism and big government. She has been watching what has been going on throughout the last 2 weeks, everything that we've seen, everything that we've heard. And as far as censoring what is posted on social media, she believes that it has all the hallmarks of big government with big, powerful agencies designed to control what is said and to control what is seen, whether it's the truth or not. We'll speak with her. Now, the idea that historic criminal events, which just happened to be videoed and posted on social media platforms, are banned by an unelected agent for censorship is just all wrong on so many fronts. Both John and Melissa are ready to fire up on this issue, and so they should, and so should you. Worse still, the legacy mainstream media, as I mentioned on the show at this time yesterday, have taken the side of censorship, not transparency. And yet their role as journalists, supposed journalists, should be to err on the side of transparency, not censorship. And take it from me, it's not just because they are full of left-leaning operatives either, but because these organisations fear the power of complainants. They fear their very existence because of complaints that have been made and force them to change the way they report on news and current affairs. This is why they're running scared. Also on the program today, the woman fighting the good and factual fight for biological women in the federal court, Sally Grover, is on the show. How does she think she fared after being up against that transgender woman, the biological man, in her Giggle versus Tickle case? We'll find out. And plus, there are so many other controversial issues, part of breaking news at the moment, right across the world in the trans sphere, including 400 international sports people who think it's okay that trans women, biological men, compete in women's sport. 400 very deluded individuals. Plus, we've got the power of the spoken word from you, from the mouths of listeners and viewers. We want to hear from you on the open line. I've got to say, we had a great rush of callers yesterday. So let's keep the momentum going if we can. It really does matter what you think. You can call in from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. The sun's about to come up. Well, maybe not much sun, but certainly the day, being Anzac Day, is about to begin, and no doubt there are some dawn services happening as I speak. And you can call in from Australia or New Zealand on the number 1-800-670-310. You're with Chris Smith. We're broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network, TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It is great to have your company, and as the man just said, there is a lot going on, and then some. Two colossal events have collided this week. The gross and outrageous suppression of free speech, which includes what we are allowed to see, and the commemoration in many countries around the world of Anzac Day. The two are diametrically opposed. The two are incongruous in a democratic free society. The two are like oil and water. Let me explain, especially for Australia's ignorant politicians and those fools in Australian mainstream media who think they practice journalism. The values of open, free debate and the tolerance of public dissent dates back to 431 BC. That was when Athenian statesman Pericles extolled those human rights. Bravo to him. In 1582, the Dutchman Dirk Coenhert insisted that it was tyrannical to forbid good books in order to squelch the truth. Now, in the context of 2024, that is an important statement because that would include truthful video of real life events that have been posted on social media sites or on the internet. That's exactly what it extrapolates to. And then we had two world wars. You cannot say, lest we forget, the lives lost in war unless you understand why men and women gave their lives in war. We have our freedoms today, the freedom to speak our truth, to express our opinion, like on formats right here, the freedom to view the truth, and the freedom to seek transparency because of their ultimate sacrifice. And how dare so many people today err on the side of censorship and not transparency, despite their sacrifice? The families that lost their loved ones realised what was achieved, but sadly, the current generation of political leaders and so-called journalists do not. They not only want to censor anything visually uncomfortable, but they want their government to do the censoring. The same arm of our society, the government, which specialises nowadays in covering the truth. And if you don't think that's the case, you better open your eyes. It's a great idea to keep the government in control of what we see or say. Who are these thick numbskulls that are allowing this to be transmitted from the media to the public? Because it's all wrong. And what makes this hideous Australian-led censorship campaign so frightening is that this crazy e-safety czar, Julie Inman Grant, is part of a global agency. Forget about how much she's being paid here and her millions of dollars for the agency that she runs. Forget about that. She's got a global agency she's part of dedicated to the censorship of material posted on both social media and the general internet. This is no longer an Australian-only intervention. Overnight, independent journalist Michael Schellenberger explained how Inman Grant was a key architect in forming speech and video that governments fear.
Australia's asking for the same thing that Brazil wanted, the power to censor the whole internet.
Many of us, myself included, have long suspected that government censors around the world, from Ireland, Scotland, the European Union, would attempt to censor the whole of the internet, not just in their own countries. And they would do so by using the excuse that people can get around national firewalls with virtual private networks, known as VPNs. Well, that turned out to be more true than I had thought or had hoped. Public has now learned that there's a formal government censorship network called the Global Online Safety Regulators Network, which Australia's top internet censor, Julie Inman Grant, who is an American, described at, you guessed it, the World Economic Forum. The group includes censors from Australia, France, Ireland, South Africa, Korea, the UK, and Fiji.
There it is. That's the global picture. Forget about what's happening in Australia. It is a global onslaught and a worldwide WEF-sponsored censorship industrial complex ratified by governments everywhere who love the idea of setting the right agenda. It's an incredible, powerful tool for them. And yet what we've seen in the past 2 weeks in Australia has shown that in the face of drama, that in the face of criminal violence and terror, our governments have no idea how to react. This past fortnight has seen our political leaders and their media lackeys capitulate to the philosophy of censorship. They hastily try and find a fix, an answer to the real-life horror that's occurred on video. We'll fix it. We'll just ban it. And instead of seeking out the cause of the horror, and in the case of the Wakeley Church shooting, that would be online brainwashing of young Australians by extremist views freely available on the internet, well, they just want to put a blindfold on the Australian public. That'll fix it. Nah, let's make it the entire population of the world while we're at it. That is the last thing we need. We need to witness the act. We need to debate the whys and wherefores. We need to find answers to stop kids being transformed into potential killers, not black out the truth. The truth will find us a way out of this. Not pull down moderate, non-fatal violence that can lead to discussion and change, as they want to do with the vision of the Wakeley Church attack. Or maybe this is more political than what we even think. Maybe this is an attempt by a Labor federal government in Australia to protect its high Islamic constituency and hide the truth of Islamic extremism. Now, that's effectively the convenient result of this blanket censorship. The extremism itself has become secondary. It's become a secondary discussion now, even less than secondary. So, in many ways, mission accomplished. But crucially, the key victim in the Wakeley attack, Bishop Mari Emanuel, wants the censorship lifted. He's the victim. He rightly wants the truth seen by the public. He wants the message to send and be discussed and moves made to stop these kids being radicalized. And the only way to do that is to show the truth. But that very basic, an essential process has just been shut down by a knee-jerk act of censorship, grossly and disgracefully backed by Australian mainstream media. You know, Benjamin Franklin once said, and it's one of the great quotes that should be applied to this very radio network, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. He knew about the need to protect freedoms than many so-called freedom fighters today, almost 300 years ago. Lest we forget, all right, lest we forget why our soldiers made their fatal sacrifices. We must always err on the side of transparency, not on the side of censorship. And that would be their message today on this Anzac Day from their graves. This is TNT.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
I wonder if you can simplify sort of the different components of the war that we're in, how it's working, what the motivation is.
The bottom line is nitrogenous fertilizers are one of the main engines, and those are being interrupted. And that's why I went to BASF twice before Nord Stream was cut, because I suspected they were going to cut Nord Stream. So I was there with Misako Ganaha at BASF, and I asked somebody inside the plant, it's a 10 square kilometer plant, right? And so I asked him, what happens if Nord Stream is interrupted? This was before it was interrupted. He said, "We are dead." Well, now it's gone. It's been destroyed, right? And I predicted that publicly.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, in these times when we're having crucial debates about our freedoms, about our basic human rights, about the idea that we are allowed to express a view, that we are allowed to see real footage of real events, this is the best time to be on this particular network. So I would suggest you start spreading the word about what we do, what we stand for, and ask your friends and family to join that fight. It is so important at the moment. One of those who fight the good fight for liberty is the leader of the New South Wales Libertarian Party. He is the Honourable John Ruddick, MLC. John, welcome back to TNT.
Good to see you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I do want to have a long discussion with you about what's going on in this country right now and what seems to be overlapping the internet across the world. But I want to do it by looking at the issue that has been basically pushed aside in this debate. That is the issue of radicalization of young people arrested in connection with the 16-year-old accused of the Wakeley church stabbing. They have been charged with a range of terrorism and extremism offences, we read today. The teens were arrested after police seized electronic devices at Stabber's home. No doubt this gave police and detectives an indication of what was brewing. So more than 400 officers from the Joint Counter-Terrorism Team, which includes New South Wales Police, the Australian Federal Police and the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation and the New South Wales Crime Commission, raided 13 locations across Sydney Southwest yesterday. They included addresses in Greenacre, Strathmere, Rydalmere, Chester Hill and Punchbowl. Isn't it, John, that the key issue associated with Wakeley, that is the radicalisation of Islamic youth, has been swept aside by the issue of censorship over the footage of the stabbing? But this is the issue we need to confront as well, isn't it?
Well, I'm all in favour of the government not restricting what we can see, particularly around gruesome events like we saw at the church. Okay, now it is confronting. If you don't want to watch it, you can turn off. Okay.
Yep.
But people need to know what reality is. We do not want to sort of sugarcoat it. Now we do not know much about these raids. In fact, we barely know anything. We know a raid has taken place. We know 400 police were involved. It's a big operation. And we know that, you know, half a dozen young people have been arrested. So we don't know anything else other than that. We know that it came from the guy that got that attacked the religious cleric. The police have obviously questioned him. They've gone through his computers. They've seen his mates. And they've come to the view that some of his mates are saying some pretty crazy other things. So let's see how that one unfolds. I will say this about Islamic terrorism. We had none in the Western world until 9/11. Now that was 9/11 was masterminded by Al Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, who was a very evil man, but he was clearly a smart dude. Okay, pulling off 9/11 was a big operation, right? And after that, Osama then went into hiding for 10 years. But even though he's in hiding, he's got the CIA and all the Western intelligence agencies looking for him like nothing else. He was still able to orchestrate about one massive attack in the West per year. There was, Bali, which is not the West, but it was an attack on Australia. London, was very bad, blowing up the buses. There was an attack in a there was an American pop singer in a big concert in Manchester, I think, and some people blew things up there. And then we had Madrid, then we had Mumbai, and we had things in the Philippines and Indonesia, all directed by Osama. Now then, 2010, they got Osama, okay? And all those big, very well-coordinated attacks, sophisticated attacks, they came to an end. But then what happened was we had the rise of ISIS pretty much straight away, and that was led by Mr. Baghdadi. And what happened when Mr. Baghdadi's in, running this thing is that there was a hell of a lot of attacks, but at the street level, unsophisticated. You know, people would get stabbed with knives. It was messy. It was evil. It was bad. But they were unsophisticated. And then Trump got Baghdadi. Now then, and that was about, you know, 2017, 2018. The good news is that since then, these attacks have largely disappeared. Now, it is concerning. It's horrifying to think that it's possibly coming back again. But I think the long-term trend is downwards for these Islamic attacks. So, and one last thing I'd say about this, Chris, is, you know, we have ASIO and all these people keep coming out and warning us every 6 months, the far right in Australia, the far right's going to do something bad. I can't think of one attack by the far right in this country. Okay, they keep building it up. Oh, you know, the neo-Nazis in Australia. Well, you know, sometimes we see their social media, but no bombings or anything. Okay, but then they've come back. You know, we've got this confrontation again. So let's see how that investigation unfolds.
Okay, I find it interesting, still on this issue though, I find it interesting that the victim of the Wakely attack, as I mentioned at the start of the program, the Bishop Emmanuel, wants the censorship lifted because he wants the truth, as you do, seen by the public. He wants the message to be sent out. He wants it to be discussed. And he wants us to do all we can to stop kids being radicalized. He is the victim of all of this. He doesn't want a censorship regime.
Well, he is a true Christian leader, and I applaud him. I have never had the honor of meeting Bishop Emmanuel, but I have heard about him because he was one of the few clerics who took a bold, courageous stand during the COVID garbage, okay, and the lockdowns and the vaccines and everything, okay? He took a stand. So they had this horrific attack on him, which we all saw. And then the media wants to come out straight away and say, oh, he's pretty crazy, this victim. He's pretty crazy. They couldn't help themselves. Trying to demonize a very good man. And now that he's out there doing a perfectly Christian act, he says, I've forgiven my attacker.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
I think that, and I don't want government censorship. I salute him. He's a good man.
Same here. Now, John Howard has condemned the Albanese government's program of green Made in Australia projects during the week. And we've been discussing this on the show. And I think he makes a very good point. But what you say, John, is that how about we hear from John Howard on free speech and censorship?
Look, yes. So obviously the massive issue of the week is that we're basically having this e-safety commissioner trying to sort of shut down the internet for things that the state doesn't want. Okay. Now, John Howard and Tony Abbott and Peter Costello, they're not idiots. And they basically do, I believe in classical liberalism, in free speech, like Robert Menzies, the guy that started their party. Okay. So what? Now, we've had Peter Dutton this week come out last Sunday and say, oh, 100% we support the e-safety commissioner. We've had, and after a week of backlash, Chris, Dutton's deputy, silly Susan Lay, has come out today on Sky News and says, we 100% support the e-safety commissioner. So, yeah, it's shocking. And she says, Musk is a bad person, blah, blah, blah. Now, you would think that the leadership, the elders in the Liberal Party, and on balance, the Liberal Party has been a good party over the last 70 years. Okay, it's lost its way in the last 20 years, but it's still got those good founding principles around freedom, etc. But Dutton and Susan Lay just don't get it, okay, and they never will get it, okay? So it should be up to the party elders to bring them into line, say, hey, look, you know, we all support the party, but if you're going to betray a principle as sacred as free speech, we're going to have to publicly rebuke you.
But maybe they don't want to public rebuke him because they want him to win the next election. So this is all about politics, which is awfully sad. But where is Tony Abbott? Where is John Howard saying, hey, listen, This is the wrong tack to take. You need to make sure that we stand for liberty, that we stand for freedom of speech. And if we have to raise the age of those who are able to open an account or see things on X or other platforms, we'll do that, but we don't take off the truth.
Well, look, the leadership is missing in action. Okay, yeah. And John Howard comes out this week. John Howard does speak out once every 6 months on some issue. I'm fine with that. Okay, he's a respected figure. But he's in the middle of this week, he's come out and he's attacked Albanese's, one of his economic policies. And I supported what Howard said about Albo's economic policies.
Yeah.
But who the hell wants to talk about economic policy this week, Chris? It's easy to talk about economic policy. It's easy to attack Albo over his dumb economic policies. The issue of the week, the issue of the year, is the e-safety commissioner, who it I call the e-safety commissar. And John Howard, he said, I'm going to go out and speak to the media. Why didn't he say anything about it? I know he supports everything we believe in, Chris, and the viewers. I know he supports it. But, yes, your point is entirely, very sadly correct. He's putting the party ahead of the nation. He's putting the party ahead of the principle and its weakness. Now, what will happen is I believe Dutton will lose the next election, and then afterwards Tony Abbott and John Howard and Peter Costello, they'll come out 3 months after he's lost the election. They say, oh, well, maybe he should have been better on free speech, okay? Too late, gentlemen. This is the moment where you're meant to stand up. Now, all three of those guys, they love Winston Churchill. They love him. Tony Abbott and John Howard, oh, they just worship Winston Churchill. I like Winston Churchill, okay. Winston Churchill went against his party on multiple occasions throughout his career, okay, and we would, I hope, what's John Howard's middle name? Winston. He's named after Winston Churchill. So I hope he can find a bit of Winston Churchill. Now, he loves Peter Dutton, John Howard. This is what you need to understand about John Howard and Peter Dutton. Peter Dutton fluked his way into Parliament. Cheryl Kerner, Chris, you might have been in China when it happened, but you would have seen the Australian media. In about 97, 98, Cheryl Kerner, the leader of the Democrats, and they were a 10% party at the time, she defects to Labor. Now, she's having a little, you know, romance with Gareth Evans, but we'll put that aside. She defects to Labor. Kim Beazley's the leader. He says, oh, well, let's run you for a seat that we're definitely going to win, the seat of Dixon. The Liberals pre-select a totally unknown, very young copper, a local copper, Peter Dutton. Now then, as that election got closer in 1998, Cheryl had an implosion. Peter Dutton wins. Mm-hmm. Peter Dutton goes to Canberra, and John Howard loves him. John Howard says, oh, Peter, you know, puts him into the ministry pretty quickly, and here he is, he's the opposition. And now I think he's not a bad bloke. I think ScoMo's got a venal streak in him. But I think Peter Dutton is basically a good bloke.
Okay, hold that thought. You say that he's a good bloke. Let's hear in a minute what he has said in the last few days about where he's standing on censorship of social media. We'll get to that in just a second. First, I've got to get some news. I'll do that. Let's go to the newsroom on TNT.
Check this out.
News Talk Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Tensions over Israel's war in Gaza have flared in America, with riot police clashing with students at colleges and universities across the country. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has responded to the uprising, demanding authorities do more to shut it down.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific.
And it's been revealed the US secretly shipped a batch of long-range missiles to Ukraine, which have been used to strike a Russian airfield.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And of course, if you're on your video streaming platform or you're on the app or you're on our website, you can press watch live and you'll see us go to air as well. Let's get back to what we were talking about with the Honourable John Ruddick, MLC, the leader of the Libertarian Party in New South Wales. You were saying, John, that Dutton seems to you to be a good bloke. Well, Dutton was asked on the ABC this week whether he thought there was a case for tougher action against social media companies.
No question at all. And I think there's a bipartisan position in relation to this. We know that the companies, and we've seen some of the comments from Elon Musk overnight, they see themselves above the law, and the Australian law here should apply equally in the real world as it does online. As Phil was pointing out before, you would be sued for defamation and you would be taken before the courts under various acts for publishing some of that which freely flows on the internet. And there's an age verification regime which has been recommended by the eSafety Commissioner from 2023. We think that's something the government should pick up straight away as well. But the Online Safety Act has significant powers in it. We passed it when we were in government.
I won't argue with the age verification, but in terms of his general stance on this issue, he has dropped the ball with the line wide open, John.
Look, it's absolutely appalling. It's a watershed moment in the history of the Liberal Party that the federal parliamentary leader has got wants to clamp down on free speech. Now, what I say is a good bloke, Chris. What I'm saying is this. Look, if you had to go to the footy for 3 hours and drink a few beers, I'd prefer to do it with Dutton than ScoMo, okay? I just think he's a pretty good bloke. But that said, he's not that bright. We've all watched him for 25 years. He gives me the impression he's never read a book in his life. Now, Tony Abbott and John Howard, who I am hereby officially accusing of being weak on this issue, they are smart guys. They have read a ton of books. They understand that for 2,500 years since Socrates, the good guys have been fighting for free speech and the baddies have been trying to censor it. Dutton and Abbott and Howard know that. That's why I'm so disappointed with them. Dutton just doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand. He thinks, oh, whatever. You know, he doesn't understand. So, but look, this eSafety Commissioner, something I found out earlier today, Chris, which I found was interesting. It was one of the first things Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull did in 2015.
When he became a Turnbull job, this one.
Yeah, he owned it, and it was brought in, Chris, it was brought in as a child safety thing for the internet. Well, who can argue with that? And I'm with you on the on the age stuff. Yeah, you should be able to have a Twitter account if you're under the age of 18. I'm up for that. Okay. But Turnbull brought it in as a protecting children online. Okay, well, I'm guessing it got through the parliament unanimously. But it's these things evolve. These things get more and more powerful.
More
now,
tentacles.
Go to the eSafety Commissioner. I went to their website earlier, and they proudly say that it's a world first. It's a world first that they get to come around and police the internet.
Oh, joy.
All I can say, Chris, is maintain the rage. Okay, and I hope there's going to be a change in the Liberal Party. But you know what? Why hasn't there been any resignations from Peter Dutton's opposition ministry? None of them have. None of them have. Why not? If this was back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and we had a federal parliamentary leader saying, oh, yeah, well, we've got to clamp down on free speech here, there would have been mass resignations. But no, they all just go along with it now because the Liberal Party is being hollowed out, okay? And the real activists, the what's important in politics is having people who are activists, people who do things. Now, the activists are leaving the Liberal Party and they're joining parties like the Libertarian Party and other good parties on the minor right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I don't think they can be forgiven for this, okay? That have to do a pretty massive mea culpa after this.
Yeah, I don't want to rob you of access to the mainstream media because although they come rarely knocking on your door, I do want you to get the word out to a large audience. But I have never seen more appalling support for censorship over transparency than I have in the last week and a half by mainstream media. Disgraceful.
You know, Chris, in the 1980s, if you went to the Australian stock market, some of the biggest companies, like the top 10 companies, were media. Fairfax, the Packer thing, Consolidated Press, PBL, whatever. You know, and all around the world, and Rupert Murdoch, you know, more than anybody, News Limited in this country and all around, they were some of the biggest companies in the world, most profitable companies they had. Kerry Packer used to say, it might have been Frank Packer, but one of them said, these classified ads, they are rivers of gold, okay? Mm. Good on them, okay? And journalists used to be very, very well paid. Now, then a little thing came along called the internet in the 1990s, and there's just been this steady erosion of people saying, what the internet does is it gives us more options. That's as simple as that. It gives us more options to get our news, okay? Yep. And everyone used to be glued to watch the 6 o'clock news, okay? Because and they used to read the morning newspaper, okay? Well, now we've got a tsunami of news. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. We can work it out ourselves, thank you very much. Yep. So these media companies who used to be not that long ago these very powerful companies, very prestigious. The two most prestigious occupations in the 1990s were stockbroking and journalism. Yeah, journalists were very well. Now the stockbrokers have largely gone out of business because of internet trading. Okay, God bless the internet. Mm. These media companies have come from this big high, and they can see that every year their market share drops, and so they're trying to circle the wagons, and they despise people like Elon Musk. Okay, because he wants to have a free internet.
I agree. That's exactly the impetus. That's exactly the motivation behind most of this. Now, still on this subject, talking about Elon Musk, you recently accepted, well, you actually offered Argentinian President Javier Milei the New South Wales Libertarian Party's offer of life membership. Now, are you going to do something similar to Elon Musk, are you?
Well, we were very proud. It was actually the Libertarian Party of the whole of Australia. We had a motion to offer him an honorary life membership, and he very enthusiastically accepted it, Chris, in front of his 2.5 million followers. Right. But we're going to do the same thing with Elon Musk.
Excellent.
Elon Musk is a heroic figure. Now, you know, he used to be a bit of a lefty not that long ago, but look, he's proven himself to be, you know, the greatest living hero today for freedom. Now, you know, when there was speculation for about 3 or 4 months before Musk bought Twitter that he might buy Twitter. And I can remember saying to my mates, I think I even said on Twitter, I said, this deal will not happen. And I was wrong, obviously. Mm. But I said, the swamp will not let Elon Musk get control of this platform. But then Elon Musk goes and offers $44 billion.
Yes.
For a company that barely makes a profit, and the shareholders of Twitter said, well, we'll be in breach of our fiduciary duties if we say no to our shareholders to not accept this offer, okay? So $44 billion, okay, then they thought, oh, well, now we've got him. He's gone and got all this debt to buy this company. I think he had about $10 billion worth of debt. He largely paid cash. But, you know, I'm not a fan of EVs, but good on Elon Musk for making money out of it. The Tesla was the best-selling car across the entire planet last year, right? So he's worth about $300 billion. He's not. I don't think he's thrilled about losing. You know, it's been a bad investment financially buying Twitter. But he said to the advertisers, "Look, if you don't want to advertise on me, f off. Okay, I don't care. I'm happy to run at a loss because I believe in free speech so much." So yes, Chris. Elon Musk is going. We're going to have a debate soon in the New South Wales Libertarian Party, the glorious North Shore branch of the Libertarian Party, which is about. You should come along, Chris.
I'd love to come along. Yes,
I'll let you know. And we're going to debate offering him a honorary membership, and we're very hopeful that he will be. If it passes, which I suspect it will, I hope he can accept it.
Fantastic. Now, can I take a quick break and keep you for another 10 minutes? Because I do have a couple of little issues I do want to get across, including your friend Javier Milei and how he's going with his reformation in Argentina and a few other issues. We'll do that after a break. We'll come back with John Ruddick on TNT.
My name's Stacey. I'm 57 and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house. And it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You and you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete, but it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Everyone deserves to live a full life. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now.
This is The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
It is Anzac Day and it is Thursday afternoon in Australia on the Eastern Seaboard. Good to have your company. I've stretched the friendship with John Ruddick and tried to push him into our final quarter hour of this hour because I have so many things to speak with him about. I do want to return to Elon Musk for a second, John, because I noticed that Craig Kelly, now the campaign director at One Nation, has been posting today on X about some shocking misinformation, bias reporting, he calls it, and fake news from Channel 9. He says, Nine conveniently forgot to tell the truth that Musk has removed the video in the Australian context. Then Nine labels Musk's comments as a bizarre spray when Musk rationally points out that no one country should be able to censor the global internet. How is that a bizarre spray? The issue in the dispute is whether a national government can order something to be censored globally. Nine are not broadcasting news. They are broadcasting corporate propaganda. But the fact that they wouldn't, as Craig Kelly says, mention that Musk has already taken it off the Australian server is just terrible misinformation, and it aims to paint a bad picture of Elon Musk, John.
Oh, yeah, this is a war on Elon Musk. They don't care about the stabbing attacks, okay? There's about a dozen social media platforms out there. X isn't even the biggest, okay? The others, you know, there's been no talk about them having video content out there. They are out to get Musk, and it's not even that he's a right-winger or a libertarian guy. He's just having it as a level playing field. Everyone can have their say. Now, what used to happen under the old management at X is, oh, you know, people would get cancelled and deplatformed for saying certain things. You can say whatever the hell you want on Twitter. You can say left-wing things. You can be a bloody communist if you want to be. He won't care, okay? You say whatever you want. You can attack Elon Musk. He doesn't care. But he's also letting right-wingers, libertarians, conservatives say whatever the hell they want to say. Now, free speech, Chris, is often messy. Sometimes it's ugly, okay?
But and awkward, just, yep.
And awkward, okay? And sometimes it's wrong and sometimes a few bad things happen, okay? But it's much better to have a laissez-faire approach to free speech because good ideas will come to the top. Yep. Now, the only alternative to having that free-for-all is to have the state come in and say what's permitted and what's not permitted, and that's just so dangerous. And it's the road to East Germany. I thought this debate was over about free speech, but you know the left are sort of running the Western world at the moment, and the left, you know, go back to the '60s and the '70s and even the '80s. The left were radically pro free speech, okay, and it was they wanted to have free speech for pornography and other things like that, okay, and they were probably right, okay, you know, because you know. Free speech can be ugly, you know, we just got to accept it. But now that the left's running the show, right, now that the left is dominant, and they sure are, now they want to be the suppressors of free speech. So it's whoever's running the show. So what it really should be, it's like the US, you know, thank God the United States, you know, they had their constitution in the 1780s. In the 1790s, they said, look, we've got to have a little bit of a check here called the Bill of Rights. 10 points, which they said, look, the politicians cannot remove these rights from the people. And on top of the list of the Bill of Rights is the right to free speech of the citizens. Yeah. Okay, so thank God that the Americans put that in there because it's the only hope we've got all around the world.
Well, we ran a survey yesterday, a For My Say survey that showed that 64% wanted a Bill of Rights and another 40-odd percent wanted a Bill of Rights depending on the points within the Bill of Rights. That's an overwhelming majority, John.
Yeah, well, look, I support a Bill of Rights now. The complication, of course, is going to be what's in it. Okay, so I think we've got to win the, you know, people might say they support it now, but then we work out what's in it. Okay, so I would like there to be, like the Americans have, the right to bear arms. Now, I know that's not popular in Australia. I accept that's a minority view, but it's just people haven't heard the other side of why it is actually important to have a counterweight, you know, the citizens having the right to bear arms, a counterweight to the government. So, but what we need is we need to win the cultural war first. We need to win the cultural war. We need to change our politics, and then we can have a good Bill of Rights. And that's where we are right now in 2024, trying to win the cultural war.
How is the Argentinian president going with his reformation of the country?
Okay. Well, you know, just overnight, huge protests in Buenos Aires against Milei. And who is it? university students, okay, and trade unions because he's cutting off their funding, okay? Boo-hoo. Now, but they are huge protests if you look at the photos. Now,
yeah,
you know, you are not a good new government unless there are massive street protests. Margaret Thatcher, who when Tony Blair came to power after Margaret Thatcher, he said, oh, look, we're all Thatcherites now. So she won the war. But Margaret Thatcher had very, very, very big violent street protests, but she was right. The people kept electing her. She never lost an election. Okay. And then Nick Greiner in New South Wales, he gets elected in 1998. Big protests. He's trying to reform the education department. Okay. And of course, there's protests against Trump. Okay. But there was no protests. And John Howard. John Howard had four terms. The first two terms, he was pretty good, very good. And, you know, I think he sort of, you know, he backslid after that. But anyway, John Howard in his first term, first couple of terms, big public protests. You're not doing the right thing unless you're upsetting the people who've been getting the free money.
Yep.
So Malay's got these big protests. But look, the opinion polls are fantastic. They are continuing to say that the Argentinian people know he's got an extremely tough job ahead of him, and they're sticking with him. And the demographic that is sticking with Malay more than anybody is young people. Not the university, you know, not all of the university students are upset with him. The young people are about 65%. They'll answer a pollster's phone. They'll say, yes, we like Javier Milei and we wish him well. Now, it's such a mess in Argentina. I was expecting things to get worse for the first 2 years because, you know, this austerity is going to be, it's going to be difficult for a lot of people, but yeah, we need to get through it to turn things around. So far, the economic indicators are looking very favourable for Argentina, but I'm still predicting there's tough times ahead. There's tough times ahead for Argentina, but we could not ask for a final leader. And hopefully he can turn Argentina around and show the rest of the world that small government is the best government.
Hear, hear. Couldn't agree more. One last point. You've been doing a little bit of homework on what the mainstream media seem to be obsessed by of late. You've come across a very interesting chart which shows a huge rise in media references to racism. Why is that?
It happened in 2009 in the American media, and the rest of the world's media largely follows the American media. So this chart tracked the references in the mainstream media to the word race or racism since the 1960s, and it was pretty low. I mean, I didn't hear much about racism in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And then Obama gets elected, and he's sworn in 2009, and instantly the mainstream media can't shut up about racism and accusing people of being racist, people like you and me probably, Chris, even though we haven't got a racist bone in our body. Now, I blame Obama for it because, look, he wrote two books before he became the president, and they're all obsessed with racism. He just can't stop thinking about race. Your family's ancestry is of some interest to you personally, but it shouldn't have any legal standing. No. And if I've got a close mate, I'll be interested to know where their parents came from and their great brother, just out of curiosity. It's not a big deal. But Obama and his race obsession. And we were told, elect a black guy, elect Obama, and the racism will be over in America. No, it was the absolute opposite. Now, it wasn't that he was a black guy. Colin Powell, if he'd been elected the president, I wish he was in many ways, or Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah.
If they were elected the president, they weren't race obsessives.
No.
Very sadly.
Weren't they incredibly intelligent individuals? You know, America would have benefited so much from either one of those individuals running the country.
Well, it would have been also very, like, they were intelligent people. I think Condi was a bit too much of a neocon, but let's put that, I think she was a very good person and smart, okay? But if we'd had we were always going to have an African-American president at some point. Now, it would have been good if we could have had an African-American president who didn't care about all the race stuff, okay? But very sadly, when America got to the point, they said, no, we want to vote for an African-American president. They unfortunately elected. Look, Obama's very charismatic. He's not an idiot. He is smart. And he's got charisma about him. He's got presence, no doubt about that, okay? But he's a race obsessive. And his presidency has made America and now the whole Western world, you know, you can't turn around the corner without someone saying, racist, okay? And it's all crap. It's all crap. You know, we're the kind, the English-speaking countries, are so kind to everybody, okay? If you want to really see racism, go to the third world and see how they treat people.
It's true. You know, you think about in a normal place like where we live in Sydney, there are 211 nationalities, I think the last thing they can. 211 in one city.
Yeah, and we all get along well. So how racist is Australia for that? We should be saying, you know, there are other things to talk about. The left want to talk about racism. The left want everyone to think racist because they want social division. They want there to be, you know, a them and an us, so that their side of the them and us equation can give them political power. That's what it comes down to.
Very true. And ironically, John, here we are on Anzac Day 2024, as I said at the beginning of the program, thinking about, lest we forget those who lost their lives and, you know, gave up the ultimate sacrifice in war. And what did they do that for? I got the impression from the very start of learning about the world, John, that it was all about ensuring that we had human rights, we had freedom of speech, and we upheld democracy and looked after our sovereign lands. They lost their lives because of that, and here we are in 2024 fighting for our freedoms.
Yes, no, it is a sad day. You know, Anzac Day is a day that we pause and remember the people that, you know, lost their lives in war. Now, I'm not a supporter of all wars, but there were important wars where World War II, Imperial Japan, you know, basically tried to invade Australia. So that was a war for our freedom. I'm not so sure about World War I, which is actually a political war, a complete waste of time. 20 million people dead, thank you very much. Okay, but I mean, World War II clearly was a moral war. I think the Cold War was a moral war. So our soldiers have given us our freedom. And we've had it so easy for two or three generations now, Chris, that we've forgotten why we fought. That's what's happened. And I blame our education department more than anything else. You know, we've forgotten our classical heritage. You know, we should be learning about the Greeks and the Romans and the all the good things of the British Empire and the American Revolution.
Yeah, we should. I'll let you go. You've been very generous on this public holiday. Thank you so much for your time, John.
John, you Chris. See you next week, mate.
All right, Honourable John Ruddick, MLC, the leader of the New South Wales Libertarian Party. And hasn't he nailed all the aspects of this particular large controversy at the moment on censorship? I thought he did, and I thought he has rather well. And if you've got something to say about all of that, by all means, jump on our talkback lines. You can do that. You can be part of the conversation from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. Or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Here is an interesting post on X from Dodge Designer. And Dodge Designer said, the video that the Australian government has requested to be taken down from X, let me repeat, it has been taken down in the Australian context, is still available on YouTube, broadcasted by major legacy media channels. Dodge Designer asks, why target X? Why not legacy media? Why not YouTube? Well, let me tell you about all of that. Let me tell you, there's two major points that people need to understand. There are the likes of Sky News, for instance, whose exposure on YouTube keeps them alive. If they were to get stuck into YouTube for carrying this video, YouTube would just cancel them as they have on previous occasions, and their business model would collapse. You won't find them getting stuck into YouTube. They'll get stuck into X. As for the rest of the media, it's Elon Musk. He's a villain. He's a supervillain. And so, therefore, what an easy target to have a supervillain like Elon Musk, the billionaire, to go for and go for his throat. That's what they're doing. And it just so happens that the eSafety Commissioner in Australia, handpicked by Malcolm Turnbull, Julie Inman Grant, used to work at Twitter. And when Elon came down the road or was about to come down the road, she fled. Now, I don't know whether she fled or she was pushed. Maybe it was part push, past fled. I don't know. But it has become something that I'm sure Julie Inman Grant would not appreciate, and she doesn't appreciate not working there anymore. So she's after the throat of Elon Musk. Now, this is pure supposition on my behalf, but you do your due diligence on all of that. Why would someone who had that past with Twitter, why would someone go for Elon Musk and not YouTube, for instance? Why isn't she up in arms at a press conference today getting stuck into YouTube for carrying that video still? Why? What would be wrong with that? That would be covering this whole issue fairly instead of picking on one social media site. Bizarre, isn't it? You can be the judge of why that is the case. Very quickly, a story that came out of Japan today, and I'll just give you the main bits because I've only got 30 seconds left. I can tell you that a new study on harms resulting from the COVID vaccine was published on April the 8th in the US-based peer-reviewed medical science journal Karuis. It represents the largest study to date on adverse effects of the COVID vaccine. And they have discovered that in Japan, five Japanese scientists used an entire database, the country's 123 million population, and discovered that they had excess cancer mortalities, which coincided with mass COVID vaccinations. Their excess mortalities have gone off the Richter scale. Maybe they could do with an inquiry, do you think? Let's get to the news.